series entitled God's Sovereignty at Work from 1 Samuel and then parts of 2 Samuel and 1 Chronicles. Our aim in the series for the quarter is that we will recognize the sovereignty of God working to direct the affairs of men and nations in spite of inherent human weakness. This is lesson two. As I said, the text is from 1 Samuel 2, 12 through 36, and focus on verses 12, 17, and then 22 through 36. Lesson titled The Father's Negligence. Starts at the program Father's Day, but not the negligence part. We want to honor our fathers today, but we also want to look at how to be a good father. So, father's negligence. Key verse is chapter 2, 1 Samuel, verse 17. Wherefore the sin of the young man was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. In our application for this lesson, the student will recognize the importance of parents training their children in the ways of the Lord. So, we're starting our lesson with verse 12, but I just want to say a few words about verses 1 through 11. And even before that, I want to talk a little bit about last week's lesson, just to get up to where we are, or 2 weeks ago. Lesson 1 was an answered prayer. And that was the beginning of 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel begins with Hannah and the birth of Samuel. And after Samuel's birth, Hannah was faithful to her vow to the Lord, that vow to give him back to God, to serve God, to serve alongside Eli, the high priest. You can imagine, for your parents, the difficulty that would be, or how hard that would be, anyway, for Hannah to give her son away. But her husband, Elkanah, encouraged her to do that, to keep her vow, which showed he was a godly man. When Samuel was weaned, Hannah took him to the tabernacle and the child would be given to Eli, the high priest, to serve the Lord there. She also brought with her 3 bullocks, 1 ephah of flour, and a bottle of wine to sacrifice to the Lord. So Hannah wanted to show her thankfulness. This is even more than the required offering for this type of thing. But the next scene in 1 Samuel that we're going to look at today is quite a contrast from lesson 1. And in chapter 2, the scene's going to shift back and forth from Eli and his sons to Hannah, or to Samuel, and then back to Eli and his sons, back to Samuel. So we'll get a contrast as we go through this. So we want to turn our attention to Eli and his sons, and we're going to find a little to admire about them. But today we'll take a closer look at them. Many of you have probably read the text already from chapter 2, the verses I gave, but as you read this text for today, what differences do you see in Samuel and Eli's 2 sons?
Religious and non-religious.
Sorry?
Religious and non-religious.
Okay. One loved the Lord, Eli's sons, not so much. We'll look at that in depth. So, lesson outline for today. Point number 1 is evil sons from verses 12, 17, and 22. Then a careless father, verses 23 to 29. And then the tragic ending of the evil sons and the careless father. So I said I was going to say a few words about Hannah's, the verses 1 through 11 of chapter 2, which is, in some Bibles, it has a subtitle, Hannah's Prayer of Praise. Hannah praised God for who he is and all that he is. But it's interesting to note that she didn't pray this prayer of praise when she found out she was pregnant, not even after she found out, after the birth of Samuel, she found out he was born healthy, but she prayed this prayer of praise when she gave him up. Something to think about there. In spite of the sacrifice she was making, she praised God. She praised him for this being the source of her joy and for being the source of her strength. She also, her words taught against arrogance. Pride has no place in the life of a Christian because God knows everything, and God's the one who will be, he is the judge. And God also has the power to turn things around, to change us, and make us more in the image of Christ. And lastly, her prayer teaches us about the sovereignty of God. God can do whatever he wants and owes no explanation to anyone. However, since he's always righteous, he's always holy, we've got nothing to fear because God has all this power and can do whatever he chooses. So that brings us up to verse 12. Verse 12 says, "Now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord." Sons of Belial was a Hebrew way of saying that they were base, that they were worthless, that they were wicked men. In 2 Corinthians 6:15, the word Belial by itself is used as a name for Satan. So that should tell us something. Remember last week's, or 2 weeks ago, Eli had falsely considered Hannah a wicked woman. He had accused her of being drunken. When his own sons really were the ones who were wicked men. And this verse tells us the why. They knew not the Lord. They had no personal experience with God, no fellowship with the Lord. But Eli, on the other hand, came to know the Lord when the Lord revealed himself to him. Chapter 3, which we'll look at next week. Now, the next verse in our outline, it jumps all the way down to verse 17, but to make sense of verse 17, we need to know a little bit about what happens in between. Eli's sons were not content with the specified portions of the sacrifices that were given to the priests. Deuteronomy 18:3, it says that the priests, as they're making the sacrifice or preparing the sacrifice, portions of it were to be given to the priests. Deuteronomy 18:3 says the shoulder, the cheeks, and the stomach. Leviticus 7:31-32 says the breast and the right thigh. So those specific portions of a sacrifice were to be given to the priests for their support. But Eli's sons would take for themselves. They had a three-pronged hook that they'd stick into the pot as the meat is boiling and pull out whatever they could, and as much as they could. In verse 15 and 16, it tells us the law mandated that the fat of this sacrificial animal was to be burned on the altar to the Lord. In contrast to that, Eli's sons demanded the raw meat from the person bringing it to be sacrificed, providing for the sacrifice, including the fat. And if they didn't give it to them, they said, we want it now. If they didn't give it to them, his son said, we'll take it by force. And so there was a lot of intimidation and threatening from his sons to these people who are just trying to do the right thing as God has laid out. So verse 17 then says, wherefore the sin of these young men, verses we just read or just talked about, wherefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. So they treated the offering of the Lord with contempt. That God had, what God had commanded the people to do for worship. And again, it goes back to they do not the Lord. Verses 18 to 21, it flashes back to Samuel and what's going on with him. And the contrast, we see the obvious contrast in verse 21, where it says the child Samuel grew before the Lord. He grew up with God, and he was growing in the Lord. Now verse 22 says, now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did in Israel, and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. So we'll learn in the next verse, they heard this from the people. So first it says Eli was very old. The writer here may be implying that Eli neglected his responsibility as a parent earlier in his life. At best, they're saying his words were that are coming were long overdue. It says, and Eli was very old, and he heard all that his sons did in Israel. So the people, as we'll learn in the next verse, the people told him that. And as if stealing from the people parts of the sacrifices wasn't enough, they were making a In doing that, they were making a mockery of the worship of God, which is at the tabernacle in Shiloh. Sadly, they engaged in fornication with the women who served at the tabernacle in Shiloh. They don't have a verse here, but they had specific responsibilities. So sadly, if you look at the big picture now, sadly, the worship of God in Shiloh is looking all too similar to the worship of the Canaanites, with immorality, with disobeying God's specific commands for worship. So it was time for the high priest to make things right. Being Eli. Which brings us to a question, and these first three questions are kind of a self-evaluation, so I'm not going to spend too much time on those unless someone has a comment they want to make. But this is comparing what was going on with Eli and his sons to our lives. Says, do you have similar traits of Hophni and Phinehas that would lead you away from the Lord? Something to think about and kind of evaluate our lives. Are we doing anything that would lead us downhill away from the Lord? The second point is a careless father. Verse 23 says, and he said to them, why do ye such things, speaking to his sons? For I hear your evil dealings by all this people. It seems like, from what's going on, and it mentions that he's very old, that because of his age and failing eyesight, that Eli didn't have much to do with the day-to-day operation of the tabernacle. He turned that over to his sons. And the people began to complain to Eli about his son's behavior. Verse 24, nay, my sons, No, he said, for it is no good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people to transgress. So it was not a good report that Eli was getting from the people. They said, your sons are making us to sin. It doesn't tell us exactly what that sin was, but it's possible that maybe their contempt, the son's contempt for the offerings, had led the people to just not bring the offerings like they were supposed to. Don't know that, but that's a possibility. Verse 25, if one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them. So Eli's point in his first phrase is that if God's going to judge one man sin against another man, then how much more is he going to bring judgments against those who sin against God, against him? And so, as you would expect, they didn't listen to their father. He tried to convince them to do right, but they just sloughed it off. They didn't pay any attention to him. Because they said the Lord would slay them. I think what this is saying is, because Eli's sons had continued and continued in their evil ways, God had already determined he was going to judge them. And because they were defiant in not repenting the past of their sins, their heart just got harder and harder. And that was the reason they didn't heed Eli's warnings now. Now we have one verse here that flashes back to Samuel's life. What's going on with him? It says, and the child Samuel grew on and was in favor both with the Lord and also with men. So Samuel's continuing to grow. He's continuing to grow in the Lord. The important thing. And this same phrase, being in favor both with the Lord and also with men, in Luke 2:52, we see the same basic wording about Jesus as a child, that he was growing in favor with both the Lord and men. So verse 27 says, and there came a man of God unto Eli, and said unto him, thus saith the Lord, did I plainly appear in the house of thy father when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house? Now, a man of God is usually a synonym for a prophet. So this prophet, this unknown prophet, came to Eli. And when it says, thus saith the Lord in the Old Testament, the prophet is bringing a message from God to someone, in this case, Eli. So from here on, when it says I, it's God speaking. Well, and it's this prophet relaying the message for God. And he asks the question. He says, did I plainly appear in the house of thy father when they were in Egypt? Now these are rhetorical questions, this one and the next one. The obvious answer is yes, he did. Although Eli's genealogy was not, we don't see it recorded in the Old Testament, he was a descendant of Aaron, the first high priest. And the Lord had revealed himself to Aaron in Egypt before the Exodus. That's Exodus 4, chapter 4. Verse 28, second question. Again, a rhetorical question. The obvious answer is yes. And did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer up my altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? And did I give into the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire for the children of Israel? So Exodus 28 tells us, records how Aaron had been divinely chosen to serve the Lord as the first in a long list of long line of priests. And his duties, it tells us in this verse, his chief duties of the priest were to place the offerings on the altar, to burn the incense in the holy place, and then to wear a linen ephod, or like a coat. Verse 29. Wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice? And why do you kick, or why do you scorn my sacrifice and at my offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, and honorest thy sons above me, to make yourself fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people? So Eli was scorning the offerings, and through his sons, they were scorning the offerings. He calls it mine offering. So they were taking parts of that that wasn't theirs to take. It was to be that God's instruction was the offering was to go to him, and they were helping themselves to parts of that offering that was to go to God. And he says, and honors thy sons above me. God is saying, you honor your sons above me. When they did these things, and Eli looked the other way, he's agreeing with what they're doing, or he's not taking any action of something that he should know is wrong. So he shows preference for his son above God. And because of that, he's unworthy of God's blessing. Another one, self-evaluation. If you're a parent or grandparent, do you set a godly example for your children? Are you conscious of how something you do, or how everything you and I do, what example, what kind of example that is for our children and grandchildren? And then the tragic end. Verse 30 says, wherefore the Lord God of Israel saith, I said indeed, or I said truly, or I said without any question, that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now the Lord saith, be it far from me, for them that honor me I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. So the Lord had promised that all Aaron's descendants would always be priests. That's in Exodus 29. And he even confirmed it with a promise by an oath in Numbers 25. So the Aaronic priesthood was perpetual. It was to go on and on. But the priests could forfeit their position in that lineage by their sin. And that's what Eli and his sons did. Their disobedience was flagrant. And because of that, the house of Eli would forfeit their priesthood. Verse 31, behold, the days come that I will cut off thine arm and the arm of thy father's house, that there shall not be an old man in thy house. So if there's not going to be an old man in his house or in his descendants, that means they're all going to die early. And we can see examples of that in his descendants. First, his two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, died, and we'll see in chapter 4, verse 11. also Saul massacred the priests at Nob, and that was those of Eli's line. And at some point in time, well, Aaron had four sons, the two we've already read about that brought strange fire and he put them to death. But that left Eleazar and Ithamar. So at some point in time, well, initially God told Eleazar, it will come down through your lineage. But at some point in time, and I'm not sure what the details of this were, but the office of the high priest was transferred from the descendants of Eleazar to those of his brother Ithamar. And the first known and most notable high priest of that line is my guess, Eli. Verse 32 says, and thou shalt see an enemy in my habitation, and all the wealthless God shall give Israel, and there shall not be an old man in my house forever. So a couple things up right here. It appears this is when they were fighting with the Philistines, and the Philistines came in and desecrated the tabernacle where the Lord dwelt there in Shiloh. And he repeats this promise, I guess you'd call it, that there shall not be an old man in thine house. This time he has the word forever. We get to verse 33, which is I found it to be a very difficult verse. Sometimes when you look at commentaries, they skip over a verse. Not intentionally, but it always seems to be the one I'm looking for. So when that happens, I go back to Matthew Poole. He wrote his commentary in the late 1600s, and he goes through every verse and every phrase of every verse, I think. But he had an explanation for this verse that made sense to me. The man of thine, he says, and I've written this out, but it's basically word for word, was Eli's descendants. And then the next phrase says, whom I shall not cut off from my altar. So evidently, at different points in time, there were ones who were not cut off, he says, not cut off by to attending the altar, but they weren't serving at it. They weren't making the offerings. From whom I shall not cut off from my altar, from the attendance at the altar, but they would suffer and live to just wait there. And then he says, shall be to consume thine eyes and to grieve thine heart, and all the increase of thine house shall die in the flower of their age. He says, this means they shall be forlorn and miserable, that if thou wast to be alive to see it, and Eli won't be alive to see this, if he would be alive to see it, it would grieve thee at the very heart, and thou wouldst consume thine eyes with weeping for their calamities. And then he closes this verse by saying, and all the increase of thy house shall die in the flower of their age. So again, all of Eli's family would die early. And the flower of their age, he says, is the 30th year, which just happens to be the year that a priest took on the full duties of a priest from everything I've read. So they get to that age where they would have served if they had not been, if not for Eli and his sons, and then they die. Verse 34, and he says, "And this shall be a sign unto thee, that thou shalt come upon thy two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas, in one day they shall die, both of them." So Eli's of old age already, and he's not going to live to experience the punishment, but the death of his two sons on the same day, that's in next week's lesson, on the same day will be a sign to him that this prophecy that God has given him is going to come true. Verse 35 says, "And I will raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to that which is in my heart and in my mind, and I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before mine anointed forever." So in the time of Solomon, Abiathar was the, well, back when I said Saul massacred all those priests at Nob, Abiathar was the one priest that got away. And so he's serving here when Solomon comes on the scene. And Abiathar conspires against Solomon, and so Solomon removes him and replaces him with Zadok, who just happens to be in the line of Eleazar, where things started, and so God gets him back to where, to what he promised in the beginning. And it also fulfills the promise or the prophecy that he makes in the beginning of this verse, "And I will raise me up a faithful priest." Zadok was a faithful priest. And so this reestablishes the office of the high priest in the line of Eleazar that God promised. Then he goes on, and with Old Testament verses, sometimes you're given some prophecy that's going to happen pretty soon, and then you're given other prophecy that's going to happen way down the road, and they're right there in the same verse. And this is an example of that Zadok and his sons will also serve in the Millennial Temple, which is still in the future. And it says, "He shall walk before my anointed." And God's anointed is Jesus, the Messiah, who will defeat all of God's enemies and rule in the millennium. Verse 36, "And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left in thine house shall come and crouch to him for a piece of silver and a morsel of bread, and shall say, Put me, I pray thee, into one of the priest's offices, that I may eat a piece of bread." So, at one point, Eli and his sons would—they spent a lot of time eating. They would take more from the pot of the boiling meat, the sacrifice, than they were supposed to, but they gorged themselves, and also Eli did. There's one place that refers to Eli as being fat. So he was not missing many meals. And now, in the future, this verse says they're going to be begging for crumbs, for a morsel of bread. So, a third self-evaluation question. Are you careful to be obedient to the Lord so that your family does not suffer because of your disobedience? Something to really think about. The application for our lesson. Application question. What have you learned from this lesson about leading others?
Set a good example.
Okay. talk about Morris Clott and Todd. There's things that we need to be teaching our kids and grandkids as we have opportunities. But if the lessons we teach them are not backed up by a godly example, they're probably going to fall on deaf ears. So we have to live out in front of them what we say we believe, because if not, we'll fall on deaf ears. So Eli's and his son's lives, we're going to learn what not to do in the negative. But notice all along, Samuel is growing in the Lord. We need to be growing also. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this lesson. Thank you for the example of Samuel as he's growing up under the tutorship of Eli. Thankful that he's staying true to you and that he continue to grow and learn and change as he needed to. Thankful that we have examples even today in our lives, people that love the Lord and walk with the Lord, and that we can look at and try to learn from them and to live before you, godly life. We pray you to bless each one of us, bless us in our daily lives as we seek to grow and live for you and to share what you